Hey, are you tired of meeting with prospects only to have them put you off again and again, turning them into yet another missed opportunity? Are you tired of trying to do the same things in meetings and not seeing any improvement in the amount of business you're closing? Do you want to stop giving your time away in hopes that a client will buy something or someday transfer their assets? Well, Whiteboard University is our two-hour live workshop where we will teach you how to have engaging meetings with every prospect and client you meet with, how to quantify your advice so prospects are willing and excited to pay you a financial planning fee, and finally, where we teach you how to explain financial strategies in a dynamic, interesting way that will separate you from all the boring advisors who do the same old thing. If you're serious about having better client meetings and closing business faster, visit WhiteboardU.com today and sign up for one of our live workshops in November. Whiteboard University offers a 100% money-back guarantee if we don't help you improve your communication and meeting skills. That's WhiteboardU.com. We'll see you there.
Justin, welcome to the podcast, brother. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me, man. Look forward to this conversation.
You bet. What I love about our business is that we're all business owners. So there's obviously the craft of serving clients, but there's so much more behind the scenes to, you know, hiring great team members, running businesses effectively, scorecards. So what I love about your story is you've done something many advisors have not done, and you've done it multiple times, where you've founded a firm, grown it, and exited it. So I can't wait till we dive into the, you know, here's the things I'm sure you did great and the things, man, if I could go back in time, I'd do it differently. But since most of our listeners are financial advisors, I'm an advisor, you're an advisor. If you can give them kind of a quick backstory to how you got into the business, did you know you wanted to be this, or did it, you know, like a lot of us, it kind of surprised you?
Yeah. So I don't actually introduce myself as a financial advisor. And I think that's the mindset that we have to have as advisors if we're growing businesses, if we're all business owners. I launched my first business when I was 15. I sold it when I was 21. It was a landscape company. Did quite well. Still in existence today. And then I came in the financial world by accident. I was dared to pass the Series 7, the 66 life accident and health exams back in, I think, 2004 in 30 days. Yeah. I didn't even know what a Series 7 was.
Did you lose like a fantasy football bet or something?
No, actually, I was recruited by American Express Financial Advisors back in the day. I just moved. I sold a company in South Georgia, moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, where my wife's from, and was actually going to seminary, believe it or not, and taking a master's level in seminary. And somebody got my resume from somewhere and like, hey, this guy was an entrepreneur. He can do this. Let's bring him in the field. A dear friend of mine to this day named Kevin, which was American Express Financial Advisors, he reached out and said, hey, good bread, I'll challenge you that you can't do this. And there was a little bit of a bonus. That was sizable back in the day. Uh-huh. And I said, man, I can do anything. Let's do it. You know, that entrepreneurial spirit's alive and well. And I passed the exam in 30 days, all three of them in 30 days, and found myself in this world that we now call financial advisory. And from there, man, it's been a journey. I'm sure going to get into it, but it's been fun.
What was your break-in period of the business where you would say, I kind of had an idea of what this job was, and then I really actually figured out what it meant to be an advisor and that I actually wanted to do it? Was that pretty quick or did it take a little time?
So I was with Ameriprise for about 6 weeks, 4 weeks to 6 weeks. I can't remember the exact time frame. And we were, they called a baby bird hatchery. In other words, they bring recruits in, try to train us. And the corporate decided to shut that office down. So here I am, less than a month roughly in the industry, had a really good mentor in the location. And corporate comes in and says, hey, here's a severance. Good luck to you. And at that point, I was faced with, well, what do I do with this? I've got these licenses. I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't want to work for a bank. I don't want to work selling insurance. I really don't want to talk about stocks and bonds. I want to deal with this concept of planning. Mm. And I can remember talking with various companies that are still in existence today, national firms, and found myself in a small financial firm for a short period of time, focused as their planner, as a strategist. I like the game of chess, and I could see these pieces, and I could read the landscape in such a way that even the seasoned advisors couldn't see it. They were so, at that time period of time, they were so product focused versus process focused that I seemed like an odd duck. And so whenever I found myself a niche that is completely different than anybody else does, I usually lean into that. And I can remember doing financial planning back in 07, 08, and then 09 hit. And I'm still doing financial planning. I'm an equity owner in a firm. I'm not really a business owner. Find myself in a business divorce, which was fun. I'm being sarcastic there. Yeah. 7 years of hell, I know the truth. 7 years of hell, $300,000 of legal fees, just nightmarish, right?
Yeah.
Ended up getting through that. And I'm like, you know what? I've already announced at this point, I already sold three companies. I had to sell the financial firm as part of the settlement. I sold my landscape company. And I sold a consulting company that I'd started to help pay for legal fees. I'm like, you know, there's got to be a way that I can serve my passion. If I can lean into my passion, I can serve our clients better. So I launched my RIA in a BD world in 2009, scrapped it, just walked away from $250,000 of revenue in 2017. Launched an RIA, 2017 restart. And from 2017 to 2021, 49 months, leaned into all my previous 20 years of experience, all my books I've read. My coach was tearing me. I mean, he was wearing me out every day, coaching me up. I'm paying a lot of money to him, but he's coaching me. And I found myself with an eight-figure exit 49 months after I launched an RIA from scratch. Wow. So did I know that I wanted to be a business owner? Yeah, at age of 15. Did I know I wanted to be a business owner in the financial world? No, not until after about 12 years of kind of fumbling through the dark, just learning more technical, then finding out, you know what? I don't like the technical. I want to be a business owner.
Man, I know we just went through that fast, but there's a few things you said in there that I was like, man, I'm seeing you in an office on a day being like, this sucks. Legal fees, like, and I've had those days where I'm like, I've left a firm or I'm like, man, this is so challenging. I'm questioning everything. I know in my heart, I want to be a business owner, but like, those are heavy days. But it sounds like you never questioned. I'm a business owner. I'm going to make this happen. But like, what was going on in your head and heart during those kind of the darkest days?
Oh man, that's a very deep question. I don't know if I can expose what was really going on my head.
You're good.
Just
yeah.
Put your mind there. Okay. Yeah. From what I can say publicly, it was like, God, what are you doing? You laid this in my heart. You put a calling in my life that I have a passion to help business owners. I have a passion to invest in my community, to invest in my team, to invest in the clients that you bring to me. Why am I facing this? I can remember, Stan, this pine tree experience. It's about 2:00 in the morning. I'm here in East Tennessee. I'm laid up at the bottom of a pine tree, literally looking at the stars, questioning God and then challenging him. And in that moment, I can remember one of my darkest days ever. He just said, just have faith. I am building you and I'm creating you for what I've created you for. I'll never forget that moment. And so to say that I've never had dark days or that I didn't want to give up, that's not true. Some tough times. But I firmly believe that God created me, that I have been placed here on this earth to impact business owners, to impact our brothers and sisters who are financial advisors, to say, hey, you have a mission, you have a calling, you have a race that you're running. It's going to get tough. It's going to get hard, but keep your eyes on your vision, on your values, on your mission. And in the end, you're going to look back saying, man, I'm glad I didn't quit. I'm glad I didn't give in. I'm glad I didn't retreat. I'm glad that the compliance world didn't break me. I'm glad that the politics didn't break me. The dirty clients didn't break me. I'm glad that didn't break me, because now after that chapter, that season, I'm telling you, man, I am living a life that many dream of. And I would never have experienced this. As our dear friend Dave Ramsey says, live like no one else, or you can later live like no one else. I would never experience where I'm at today had I given in to my vision and what my core beliefs are.
Yeah. Man, that's resilience. For me, I think there's times where I want to try to normalize like the suck in our business. That, I mean, you have podcasts, you've written books. I've done some of that stuff. I think it's easy. I remember when I was a young advisor in my 20s, I would see other people be like, they're so far away. It feels so easy for them. That I appreciate you sharing that, because like, this business is challenging and you should have hard days, or you're not pushing yourself hard enough. You're probably not taking enough risk as a business owner if you're not. If you could talk to me about coaching and how that's impacted you, because we run into advisors that, and usually it's the most successful ones that are fully bought into it. It's like the best athletes have coaches. And then you have a lot of other ones that see it as an expense, and they use it for a little bit or they cut it. What's been your journey in that?
Yeah, so I agree with you on the first part of that statement that the most successful people in their lives have somebody in their lives who is speaking to them. I can remember I was sitting in Chicago when I made the decision, decide means to cut away all other options. I didn't make a choice. I made a decision that I was going to stop my firm in the broker-dealer world, and I was going to go solely RIA with the intent of building an RIA that was going to be worth $5 million in 60 months. I remember that decision. I can tell you exactly where I was sitting. And I came back, and as I'm walking through how I'm going to do that, I built my pro forma, took all my data points that I used to build businesses thus far. And I went and talked to my, at the time, wasn't a coach, but my mentor. And I said, here's what I want to do. And in that moment, he said, good, Brad, you need to pay me a significant amount of money, five figures a month. Okay. Significant. Okay. And I was like, dude, I've only got budgeted for my family with wife and three kids, 60 grand a year in income. I mean, we're living on beans and duct tape and prayer, brother, already. He goes, you're right. You need to pay me 10,000 plus a month and as a coach, and you need to set aside 60 grand a year for marketing. Now, I didn't have any clients. And I'm going, holy Batman, how am I going to do this? And I can remember at that moment, it was during the Olympics and various things. And we used Michael Phelps as an example. We talked about him, me and my coach on a regular basis. He said, Michael Phelps literally has a coach on the side who's never won an Olympic, but all he's looking at is his arm placement. And he's looking at him, he would hold it up, his arm placement as an angle. For those of you who can see me on the screen, that he would say, your arm. And all he would do with Michael is do this. He wouldn't even say a word. He would just point to him on something he could see because he was laser focused on that one position. Michael had about, I think, 13 coaches at the time, from a dietitian to a physical therapist to travel coach, you name it. And he's decorated because of it. And my coach said, Justin, you need to hire me. And I said, why do I need to hire you? He said, because you, I'll never forget it, Miss Dan, never forget it. He said, because you're too daggum smart. And I went, what are you talking about? Too daggone smart. He goes, because you know too much and you're going to be like the Caltron girls. And I went, what's the Caltron girls? I didn't know any of this stuff. So here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, this is where the Manhattan Project took place, not too far from where I live. And back when they were building the Manhattan Project, the PhDs built this dial board that they brought high school girls in while the PhDs working on other projects to monitor the board. They wrote out these rules that the girls had to follow. The girls followed them to a T. And the output was perfect, exactly what the PhDs wanted. But when the girls were in school, the PhDs would sit at the board and they'd start tinkering and they start tursing the dials because, hey, they're the PhDs and they know more, right? And what happened was, is the PhDs, even though they knew more, they didn't get the same effect as the young ladies who were able to just follow the simple processes. And he said, Justin, at the most, because you're too daggum smart at what you're doing. And because you know your industry, because you know what you're doing in your industry, you're not going to listen to sound counsel. And therefore, you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve within the time frame you want to achieve it. So the dollars that I'm going to charge you is going to force you to listen to me as the person in the empty chair across from you, so that whenever it gets tough, I'm going to kick you in the teeth, just like that old football coach did. I'm going to tell you, suck it up, buttercup. Let's go. I'm going to tell you, yeah, this isn't right. Let's move forward. Let's push into our destination. And Stan, I got to tell you, man, without that man who's now since retired, without that man speaking to my life, I would not have experienced an eight-figure exit. I would not have been able to take the next company to almost a nine-figure exit. And I wouldn't be able today to sit here some 30 years after being an entrepreneur and talk to young advisors as a coach to them now and say, hey, look, I've been where you're at. I know this sucks. I know you're paying me a lot of money. You can do this. Let's stay true to your vision. So, man, my coach, he changed my life, man. Changed my life. And I think that every advisor, I view us as coaches because we're coaching our clients day in, day out. I've been there. I've won the awards. You've seen the awards. I've won the awards. So I know what it's like to coach your clients. But if you're not being coached, then in my opinion, this is going to be controversial. I'm sorry. In my opinion, you're unworthy. If you're not willing to be coached, you're unworthy to be a coach yourself. And could it be that that is the reason why so many financial advisors fall out of this industry? Could it be that the reason why they're not getting coached is why so many RIAs stay hem-ha and they don't move? I believe it is.
Yeah, I bet you triggered some people right there for sure. If you're listening and you just got triggered, I think my hope is you're aware of that and you wonder kind of, you're curious on why you got triggered. Is it because you're not being coached, you know you should? Is it because you think, no, I got it figured out on my own? I've been in rooms with a lot of advisors and I feel like if, you know, the way you just said it, like a passionate plea to like, hey, do what we know works because we've seen it and the alternative isn't as good, is that you can motivate them to kind of be on board for a little bit. But what do you think in your experience as a coach, do people get fired up and they get kind of the high of coaching and then they bail when it gets challenging, or they get hung up on the expense of coaching? What do you think is the reason most advisors don't have good coaching?
Well, there's certainly in a mindset of abundance versus scarcity, right? Mm-hmm. So I've never looked at coaching as an expense. I've looked at coaching as using somebody else's experience to pour into my life, somebody else's wisdom, somebody's traveled this road before to greater my success opportunities. I've never looked at an expense. Currently, in my new business that I've launched, my coaching business for financial advisors, I have spent over $150,000 this year in coaching. And in less than 7 months' time, I've been able to shorten my time frame in my business by about 6 years. It's ridiculous because I'm hiring experts to show me. Do I look at that as an expense? Yeah, on the P&L it is. And yeah, it sucks when I look on the P&L, but I'm not in this for a one-year time frame.
Right.
I'm in this to impact people over the next decades, right? Just like most of our advisors listen to us are not in it to say, hey, we're going to build a big empire and jump out next year. Mm-hmm. Look, I know what it's like. Like I said, I know what it's like for the lady who changed my diaper to be a client and to say, you're selling your company. Where am I? So I think there's this abundance versus scarcity mindset. I think the reason why we as advisors are hesitant, or the reason why that we'll take the hard knocks, is because number one, our pride's in our way. We don't want to admit that we don't know something. Why is that? Because we're tested every single day. We're constantly on the defense within client meetings. When they bring a challenge to us, we don't want to say, I don't know. So what do? We're well-educated. We spend time and time and time just researching new data points. We read articles like from my friend Michael Kitsis, who writes out detailed articles, and we read them and we absorb them and we talk to our clients about these new things. So whenever we say, I don't know how to do this, it goes against the very persons that we are day-to-day in our jobs. So I think that's one reason, but ultimately I think it's that we truly don't know what we want.
Hmm.
Just like if you ask a client, hey, where do you want to be? And they're like, dude, I don't know. I want to make $100,000. Well, is that before after tax income? Well, I don't know. And if you just really dive into a client, get them to say, what do they want? It usually takes us, what, 3 meetings, 4 meetings, years sometimes to really unpack that envelope to see what's at the core of the person. The reality is that as advisors who are business owners, we've never taken that Selah moment, that old Hebrew word that says just rest for a second, to internalize and say, what is it that I truly want? Stan, whenever I sat in that room in Chicago and I said, I'm going to build an RIA in 60 months, it's going to be worth $5 million. Boom, boom, boom. I knew exactly the destination I was going to achieve. And come hell or high water, I don't care what was in front of me. I was going over it, through it, around it, under it. It didn't matter because I knew exactly what I wanted. 49 months later, it was more than double what my anticipation was. I was able to achieve much greater than I even thought was possible because I got crystal clear on what I wanted. And then my coach was able to say, no, that's a shiny object. No, that's going to derail you. Here's think about that. No. What you're doing is not moving into the outcome. And so I think the reason why oftentimes we're hesitant is that we don't know what we want. And my challenge whenever I take on a new one-on-one client or a new group coaching client is I'll say, whenever I trigger you, like we did just a while ago, whenever I trigger you, it's going to happen. Because we've all been triggered when we don't like it with something here.
Yep.
That is the very advice we must lean into.
Mm.
That is the very advice that we've got to say, I don't like that. Cool, I'm going to do it anyways. Yep. Because the coach is seeing something that we're not doing, that we don't like, that we're rejecting, that we're not adopting, that's keeping us from reaching our ultimate goal. And so whenever we're triggered, I tell the clients that once we know your vision, I'm going to trigger you several times. I'm going to hold you accountable because that's what you're paying me for. You're going to get this come hell or high water. And whenever I trigger you, that's the advice you got to listen to. If you're like, yeah, I know that, then let's just pass that off and let's move until I find those things that I'm going to trigger you with.
Nice. Let's move into, for all of our listeners, the idea of viewing our practice as a business, growing it, the exit process of it. If you can kind of give a high level of, I've done it, here's what I wish I would have done different. And then, you know, what's a framework around that that our listeners can keep in mind?
Yeah. So after doing this now 7 times in the industry, so 7 different companies, I think there's a 4-point framework that if I had known this, I would have done this years ago and it would have even shortened my success rate even greater. And I would have been able to impact more people and I would have been able to impact more lives and help the clients that we love to serve, help them reach their destination further. So number one is I have to know the value of my company at all times. I have to look at my company as an asset. Our business is there for one reason only, and that is to generate wealth. That's it. If it wasn't there to generate wealth, we wouldn't be business owners. Mm-hmm. We want freedom, obviously. We want to make high income, obviously, but we're there to generate wealth. That's the purpose. So at all times, I have to know the value of my company. And as I'm looking at the,
how do advisors do that really practically? Hey, what's the general multiple? It's either, you know, 5 to 8, depending on your thing. Is there a simple way for an advisor today to say, I have an idea, or is it more of a complex valuation process?
It's a complex answer to answer that, because we probably have a plethora of different advisors, different levels in it, listening to the audience, right? So in the early days, it could be very simple. You don't have any value. As you grow, just reality, right? I mean, if you have $60 million of assets and you mean you're living hand to mouth, you go to sell it, there's no value there really. Yeah. I mean, somebody may pay a little bit on an earnout type structure, but you're not going to get a walk away, take this check. On the other hand, I have firms that I consult with that are nine figures, right? That are doing, they're billions of dollars of assets that are managing, right? That's a different type of multiple. So you can claim a valuation through a number of different ways. There's firms out there that have online calculators that can kind of get you a finger in the air type of movement, know which way the wind blows. Mm-hmm. I use a software. Anybody that wants to do it, I can send them a link to a software that we use that shows free of charge, no strings attached, that says, hey, you put in your data points. It shows you roughly what your business is. So point one is knowing where your business is. And then point number two, the contingency of point number one is you have to know what a best-in-class business could be worth. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's simplify this If you have $100,000 of EBOC, earnings before owner's compensation, the multiple is 2, you have a value of $200,000. But what if a firm down the road has $100,000 of EBOC, but they have a multiple of 4? Same exact data point, but for some reason, something is causing that multiple to be twice as much as yours. Mm-hmm. That's what's called a value gap. So what we're trying to do as business owners, number one, identify the value gap. What's our current value and what could it be with the whatever the measuring tools being equal. Okay. Yeah. So I'll get this to you. We can put a link in your show notes so people can just click on it and determine that. Number one is understanding the value gap. Number two is how do we increase the value without necessarily striving to increase profitability? So here's another trigger for our team here, for our people listening. I have yet to see a firm, a business that is valuable, that's also not profitable. Let me say it again. I've yet to see a business that's valuable. In other words, somebody's willing to pay the money for it. That's also not profitable. But I've seen many, many, many businesses that have unbelievable sales and unbelievable profits that are not valuable. So our focus has to be value. It cannot be profitability. It cannot be the revenue of the sales that we're generating. It's always, we're measuring our business like we would a stock. Mm-hmm. How much is that stock value today? Okay. Yep. So we have to know our value, what it could be. We have to know what drives the value. There are 8 key areas, and for sake of time, we can't go through all today, but there's 8 areas that drive value. Once we understand our value, then we have to have a strategic plan that gives us action items. I deployed in my own company a strategic plan that gives me 27 specific action items every quarter. And it gets so granular, it tells me who is to do what by when. And they work together driving my value, identifying those 8 value drivers and helping me drive the value of my company. That's the third step that we teach. And the fourth step is you have to have, no questions asked, you have to have somebody who's holding you accountable to that value growth that you aspire to have. 4 simple steps. Man, Stan, if I had known that years ago, my first business that I sold for just over 6 figures, man, it would have been double that.
Oh, yeah.
My second, third businesses would have been 7 figures. My fourth business achieved an 8-figure exit because I deployed that in my company because my coach was teaching me those things.
Yeah. I feel... I get angry with other advisors at times, not at them, but with them. I think there's a frustration of we kind of know the things that they need to do, yet there's something that stops them from doing it. And I run into coaching with advisors at times where I'm like, do you have a scorecard you look at monthly? Like, do you know the data points of your business? And most advisors don't. And we try to get them to do it, yet for some reason they don't. And a lot of us as advisors know that if we had a coach, it would help us, or that the best advisors have coaches, yet most of us don't have coaches. What do you find? And we coach advisors, and you want to push advisors to do it, but you can't do it for them. To the people listening now, they're like, I've had coaching in the past. I feel like I'm stuck. I'm not breaking into the stuff Justin's talking about. Short of a general, hey, it's up to you, go get it done. What can help them kind of bust through that?
let's take it out of coaching for a second. Let's talk about the world that we live in as advisors. The clients that we love working with, at least for me, and I think most of us would resonate with this, is we love the clients who are educated, mm-hmm. who have clear goals, who ask very good questions. Research, they ask good questions, they challenge us. We love the clients that challenge us. We may not admit it, but we deep down love them, right? Mm-hmm. But then ultimately, they implement baby steps. They don't go out, we don't typically give the client 37 action items. We may give them three, mm-hmm. right? And say, hey, this is what I need you to do, especially if they're planning a relationship, over the next quarter. Go hit these three things. And don't, if you get stuck, and I'm going to be checking on you. I'm going to hold you accountable as a coach, as a financial, I'm going to check in on you. If you get stuck, mm-hmm. let me know. For example, how many times have you said, you know what, your wheels are out of date. You know, your estate plan needs to be updated. I realize that we've been talking about this for 6 years. How about if I just schedule an appointment with the attorney, and then you and I and the family go together? How many times have we done that? Because we know that working alongside somebody, the anger that I share with so many of my brothers and sisters out there in the financial world is, number one, there's a lot of coaches who've never been in the seat.
Yeah.
They don't know what it's like. They failed in financial advisory and they're like, okay, I'm going to go teach you. I'm going to be a coach for you. It's like, come on, you know, I don't have time for that nonsense.
Yeah.
But number two is I get so angry at coaches who say, here's what the problem is, go do it, versus teaching me how to do it, versus come alongside in that relationship and saying, here's exactly what you need to do. Here are the critical, what I teach is critical success factors in your business. Here are the three things. Let's identify them that matters to your vision, not as a generic. You know, none of our clients like generic planning. None of us are, we're not all equipped the same way. We build custom plans for our clients. And as such, our clients respect us when we give them exactly what they need to accomplish their goals. Many coaches today don't do that because they don't have the depth of knowledge to do it.
Yeah.
And so whenever I exited my last company, I was like, you know, I'm tired of this. I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated that I had to look outside, who people don't know the compliance regs. They don't know what it's like to market. They don't know what it's like to sit across from the client when their loved one just died, or like I've done recently, help a client plan their funeral before they're dead. Mm. I mean, they don't know what that's like.
Yeah.
And so just for somebody to try to coach me through that who's never experienced it, to me, it's like me trying to go elk hunting like I'm going to do in 2 weeks and having a guide out there who's never been to the Rocky Mountains that maybe lives in the flatlands of Florida. Nice. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
I want to hire somebody who's born and raised in the Rocky Mountains who's going to guide me around the coaching world.
Love that, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot we can keep covering. I appreciate you kind of getting deep quick. Where can folks that are listening follow up? That link, we'll include that in the show notes for the valuation piece. That's super helpful. Where can people get some more info about you?
Absolutely. So my website is justingoodbread.com. It talks about all the courses. You can connect with me there. You know, what I'm enjoying most of all right now is Instagram. Instagram I'm having fun with. It's a lot of fun. You can see my whole life, and I'm sharing a lot of things for business owners. LinkedIn, I'm sharing a lot of stuff for financial advisors. I think there's 7 posts going out a day for my team. And then, you know, I've got a YouTube channel, podcast. I literally teach what I'm talking about in depth. There's over 300 hours of context that financial advisors can grab and utilize. My challenge ultimately is it doesn't have to be a Justin or Stan or anybody out there. We are not qualified to coach others unless we're being coached ourselves.
Yeah.
Period. So if you're stuck, if you find yourself in that scarcity mindset, if you feel like, hey, I'm moving, but I'm not moving at the rate I'm going at, if you don't have somebody, if I could talk to the heart of all my brothers and sisters in the industry, get you a coach, somebody who's been there, done that, who can speak life into you when the times are tough, because they happen frequently, who can work with you to drive you, push you, almost like that whip behind you sometime, or that pulling you on the rope, help you reach your destination.
Love that. It's good stuff, brother. Appreciate you.
Man, I'm glad to be here. Hope this helped everybody.
No, this was great. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, bud.